Welcome back to The Weekender on CJLS. I'm Sean McClellan. Zona Games, an independent game studio known for their retro games, is based right here in Yarmouth, and they had some exciting news with a launch on PS4 on May 31st. So just recently, Matthew Doucette joining me in the studio today. Good morning, Matthew.
How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good.
How was it when you guys heard the news?
Well, we knew about the news in advance, so this is something we knew about beforehand, kind of thing. So,
when did you guys find out?
Probably about a month. There's always like we kind of pick dates, and we're not really sure. Then as it gets closer, they become more certain. So I'd say about a month. We were looking at maybe a month and a half, maybe even 2 months. We were looking at this date.
Did they contact you and say, okay, it's signed, sealed, delivered, and it's going to be in stores on this day? And
it doesn't really work. You'd think it would work that way, but it's more or less, it's almost, I guess it's kind of that way. It's more detailed than that. It's a little bit, it's quite, the games industry is quite volatile, especially the release dates. Like, things can jump around. At any point, all of a sudden, something else could have taken that spot, and we would have been bumped out. Or maybe we discovered a bug at the last moment, and then we can't release the game.
We've seen that a number of times over the past couple of years, where suddenly somebody says, oh, we're going to wait another couple of months to get this out. We want to, you know, tighten it up a little bit or something like that.
Exactly. Now, and then picture all the games that are coming out and all the different release slots. And that every once in a while, one disappears, one jumps in. So it's a very volatile thing. The closer you get to it, the more certain. So once it was 2 weeks out, I mean, we knew for sure that that was going to happen. But maybe a month out, we knew for sure. But until then, anything could happen.
How much testing goes into putting one of these out? Because I hear all the guys talking about, oh, I'm part of a beta test. And
a lot of testing. So in-house, that's us. We test as we develop a lot. Almost every single change we make is tested. Sony, again, does testing, and they actually do it for every country. So they'll do it for the Americas. They'll do it for separately for Europe, for separately again for Japan. Because actually, technically speaking, they're different builds. So they actually are a little bit different game. The game itself, the part that you see, is actually the same. But so, and they test it pretty extensively, almost a month's worth of testing that they did on this game.
What's the difference in the audience in the different areas? Because I'm guessing North American audiences are completely different than, say, Japanese audiences or somebody in the Ukraine or yeah. Africa or whatever.
We're not really sure. We know that our products work the best in Japan. How could I say they're the most well-received in Japan? We know that. And I think it has something to do with our retro style, the arcade style, the quick reflex, the score running, where it's more like skill focused. Games that tend to do better in the Americas and Europe, basically the rest of the world, tend to be more story based, more games that hold your hand. Like, it's okay that you're not good enough to actually beat this level. We'll just help you through it. This is how it's almost a morph from games to becoming more like movies. So just to make sure everybody actually gets through the story kind of thing. I would say there's that.
The gaming industry has changed so much since I used to play in arcades back in the early 80s and mid 80s and that. It's now outselling movies mm-hmm. every single year. I mean, the top movies aren't selling as much as anything in the top 10 for games. Was that already starting to happen when you got into creating games, or was that something you saw and went, hey, let's go create some games?
So that's been, I think the gaming industry sells better than all the other entertainment industries combined, and it has been doing so since for at least like something like 10 years, maybe longer than that. I've been making games ever since I was a kid. My brother and I, who founded Zona Games, we've been coding since we were in grade 2. So we've been doing it before it was even... There was actually a video game crash when we got into video games. That was like... the industry didn't really understand it at that point. We do it just because we want to do it. It's really... The fact that the industry became so big is really almost irrelevant to us. The big selling games really are almost movie like. it's bigger than what we can do as a small indie studio. So there is that divide. There's a divide between the AAA movie style games and then the smaller studio, the indie studio style games, which we do.
So you guys know your niche and you market to that.
Basically, that's right.
I was going to ask you how you got started. So grade two, you're sitting there. And you guys start doing some coding. How did you get into that?
Computers back then would turn on inside a code editor, and they didn't do, you remember maybe like a VIC-20, Commodore 64, I had a TI-994A. When you turn them on, it would enter BASIC, which is a programming language, and it wouldn't do anything until you started coding it. It literally would do nothing until you started coding it. So it kind of begged to be coded, and a lot of computer stuff was like that back in the day. Even some of the games that we bought would come with a list of the source code that you'd have to type in. So if you were interested in it, you could actually look at the source code, see how different things were done. You could mess with it. So I think the first game programming I ever did was taking a game someone else made, and I would change the by the author name, put my own name in. I mean, I'm just a kid. And it was really cool to see that the game was made by me. So it's kind of a hack, but that's how it started.
Now, the first computer game I ever played, I'm not even sure about the name. I think it was like Castlevania or something. It was a vampire in a castle, and you had to answer questions. Yes, no, move over here. And is that what you're talking about with the early games, or even beyond that?
It would have been more simple than that. Yeah. Oh, you mean like the text-based?
Yeah.
It was all text. That one might not have been called Castlevania. Castlevania's a different NES game, Nintendo game. But yeah, it would have been even more basic than that. It would have been mostly text based though.
And I thought that was basic.
Yeah.
Compared to today, it is.
I mean, the games we made did have graphics. So yeah, if it was just purely text based, but the thing is, those text based adventures were actually complicated internally.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they were the story, the movements, the items. So the games we made might have looked better back then. They had graphics, basically, but they would have been more simple than the game that you just mentioned. Yeah.
Once you got past that first little bit, is that what you were you sitting in, say, junior high and high school going, I'm going to create games for a living?
Actually, it didn't work that way. Nothing is ever a straight line, I will have to admit. We were talking about that before. No business is not a straight line. Nobody understood it when we started, and that's everybody. That's not just parents, teachers, and our local community. This is the entire world. There's a video game crash, a global video game crash. The industry didn't understand itself. Other industries didn't understand it, and we just were interested in it, and we just kept doing it. It didn't seem like it was going to be a thing. By the time I was in high school, that's when I first realized I could actually take programming courses at colleges and stuff. And that was amazing to me that it was that big, that I could actually go take this for potentially do this as a living. When I was a kid, I wasn't thinking about a job. In hindsight, it probably would have been good for me to think about that because games were already making money by that point. And I probably could have produced some sort of income in junior high with my brother and I, had we known what we were doing, you know, had we actually just released some of the products that we made, because we were just making our own stuff and not distributing it anywhere, you know.
You were just doing it for fun.
Yeah, just doing it for fun.
And so, it turned into a career.
Yeah. And then, I went to school to try to get a real job and all that stuff.
I've heard of them.
Yeah.
These
real jobs, I know. And then when I finished school, the first thing I did was start up a video game company. I don't know. I just tried. It felt like it was the first time I really could do it where there's nothing else in the way. School and college and university, all these things weren't in the way anymore.
Did you start up right here in Yarmouth or were you living away? Or
started here right in Yarmouth. It's a different company. It's called Sawtooth Distortion at the time. We didn't succeed, but a year in, we didn't really know what we were doing. The industry had moved so far beyond us, or so we thought. It actually didn't, but it can really feel that way when you're involved in technology that moves so fast. But ultimately, if you have a baseline, fundamental understanding of games, of coding, of whatever, you are always still in the loop, fundamentally. And we were too. So then years went by. We weren't really sure what we were doing. We were just doing other entrepreneurial ventures. And then Microsoft came around in 2008 and with the idea of supporting indie studios, like small studios like us, which traditionally was not done before. Not just anybody can make an Xbox game. You had to sign a contract with Microsoft. And same thing with PlayStation, same thing with Nintendo. And these would be, the best analogy I can think of, they would be similar to like an indie band signing a record label. So some of them would make it, but not many.
Yeah.
And we would be one of the ones that didn't make it. We never even tried. So when Microsoft was opening up their platform, Jason and I thought we should give this a shot. And that's the beginning of Zona Games right there.
So you guys started putting out some stuff and some feelers, and what would work, we like retro stuff, we're going to try that.
What it was, yeah, we realized there's a bunch of games that we used to play, like these retro shoot 'em ups that just weren't dominating the market anymore. And I always wished these games still existed, so that's what we wanted to make. Microsoft was holding this contest. It was a global contest in like 100 countries. And we actually naively thought that we could win this because we saw some precursor entries. They weren't so sharp. So Jason and I took 2 months, created a prototype of a game, and we entered it. We didn't even place. But the thing is, it had begun at that point. We had a working game that could be maybe released in a few more months. We didn't release it in a few more months. We actually re-entered in the contest the next year with it being more polished off, and we.
Friends and family sitting there going, what do you mean you can make a living off that?
Yeah, I know. It's kind of crazy, especially because it is just some retro. It almost was a new thing, even though it was an old thing, if you know what I'm trying to say.
Well, I remember when they released a package a few years ago that had all these old games on it that nobody had released in years. You know, there were old versions of Pac-Man and things like that on it, and Asteroids and everything. And they sold like crazy because people hadn't seen them around, you know, maybe in movies or something or
right.
TV. So you went for that feel. And I have to say, watching the promo video, I was telling you before we started that I had a major flashback to the early 80s when I used to hang out in arcades and play Asteroids and Space Invaders and so many other ones, Gorf and all that stuff. It was just the same feel.
That's
watching
good.
That.
Yeah,
and
I like that.
And it was great that you said that's what we were going for.
Yeah, the retro feel, exactly. Almost like a retro re-envisioned. So it's more intense, probably, than those games. Yeah. So we use the more of the power of the systems that are available today. Four player, all that stuff. So all these consoles come with four controllers. You can plug in four controllers. So the whole idea, one thing we brought back, too, that's not that popular today is the couch co-op. So you can play with your friends on the same screen. A lot of games are 3D now, so you each need your own perspective view. You need a split screen, if anything. You can't be on the same screen at the same time. So a lot of these old Nintendo games, that's kind of what we were shooting for around Nintendo, Sega Genesis, those style of games, you could play on the screen at the same time. And that's really what, there's something special about it. I'm not even sure how to quantify it, but that's the era that we were trying to bring back with this.
For people my age, it's more of we look at some of the newer games and go, that's too complicated for me. I just want to go back to my Asteroids and Pac-Man. And
ours are basically move and shoot, so anybody can pick this up.
Now, how did you get in touch with Sony at first to send them the information or to apply? Do you have to apply to see if they'll take your game?
Exactly, you do. So not everybody, so this Xbox 360 idea that we had before where they're inviting everybody in, all the indie studios in, that's not a thing anymore. Now, they each have their own indie subsection, or they, no, I shouldn't say subsection, they each have their own indie outreach, so to speak, but they you can still be rejected from it. Not just everybody gets in. Before, it was just an open door, just everybody comes in, so you can get a lot of low quality products that actually tarnish the high quality ones, because the low quality ones will overwhelm the high quality ones. There'll be more of them. So anyway, to answer your question, yeah, so Sony, we have to apply to it, but Sony actually invited us on their platform because they were already aware of us, which is pretty cool. Xbox One, like Microsoft was already aware of us, but we applied for on Xbox One as well. So essentially what happened, this is like late 2013, we became official developers and publishers on both of those platforms, which is cool. So we don't even need a publisher if we didn't want one. And we could actually publish somebody else's games on those platforms too.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Everything has to be passed though. It's a regulated system. That's why, that's more than anything is why it is. It's a big deal. It's because you, not just anybody can get on there. The company has to be accepted, and then the individual games have to be accepted as well.
Now, this is called Score Rush Extended. Mm-hmm. Was there a Score Rush Unextended ahead of that?
We didn't call it that. We just Score Rush. But and that's the one. That's one of our titles on 360, the Xbox 360. The claim to fame for it is the number one Japan thing we're talking about. So it was the highest rated, user rated title in Japan, and it was a bestseller. So it, for a period, it was the top seller in Japan as well. It kind of became Zona Games' trademark, or it kind of became just our claim to fame. Why should you pay attention to this game? Oh, it was a number one in Japan title.
So how were you guys when you first got the news that you hit number one in Japan?
Oh, we were surprised. We just had some Japanese friends who became friends with us because they were fans of the game. And actually, it was a previous title that became number one in Japan. It wasn't Score Rush. It was a previous game. So it was something we had repeated three times, which I don't think was replicated in any other country. So I think we were the only studio to do that. Other studios were number one in their respective countries and whatnot, but we're the only studio to do it again and again and again. So what happened was one of my friends wrote me and said, "You're number one in Japan," basically. I was like, "What are you talking about?" And he said, "Yeah, see here." And then I found a way to go in and view the stats from what some gamers may not know. You're only viewing the stats from your country. It's like for Xbox anyway. And I found a way to view the Japanese stats, and then we were able to see that we actually were the top spot.
So that shock.
It was pretty cool. It was the first time that we actually realized gamers also thought the way that we were thinking. Like there was this like the games that we wanted to make, gamers also wish existed. It wasn't just my brother and I that wanted these games. And that very well could have been the case. You can easily just make your own little thing, and then you're the only fan of that thing.
Well, I've met lots of musicians or writers or artists or whatever that their family all love it, and nobody else
right.
does.
That's why you can't listen to friends and family.
They're going to tell you they love it no matter what, eh?
Yeah, because they want you to succeed.
Except for that one buddy that's going to go, "No, that's terrible."
Yeah, so you got to put it out there. It's a scary thing. Put it out there and just take whatever comes back and learn from it.
What was the reaction from the industry and gamers when they found out that you were in a place called Yarmouth, in a place called Nova Scotia that most of them have probably never heard of?
They don't know of it, so.
Oh,
really.
So they just know it's Zona Games and that's it.
They know of Canada as being a super supportive country, is what they know. Because we've been in GDC, which is the Game Developers Conference in San Francisco, and Nova Scotia had a booth at this conference. So when I first went to GDC, the first time I'd ever gone to a conference was just a few months before I went to Montreal. I didn't even know why they were inviting me. It was basically the Nova Scotia government that was inviting me, inviting us. It was Jason and I. And we had no idea why would anybody even want to talk to us. I didn't understand it. Then once we went once, we realized we actually connect to these people and these companies are interested in us. So we went to GDC a few months later. They had a booth, and it was right next to Nintendo's booth. It was right next to this IGF, which in the indies, it's an independent games festival. It's the biggest indie thing that happens, and right next to Google as well. It was just, so they just see that we have a booth, like our government has a booth, and we had a place within that booth. So on the expo floor, people could come by and check out our games. And when you just consider what that means, if you, Sony came up to us and saw our stuff and started talking to us, that wouldn't happen unless we were right there or unless we tried to go talk to them. But then there's always a sense that you're more serious if you're at the show, if you have the booth. You know, an email is just not as powerful as that. Plus, they get to see the game. They get to see you playing the game. They get to see You talking about it, explaining it, it's so much more powerful than any email will ever be. So even though we're from Yarmouth, I still do advocate to go out and actually meet these people, whoever you want to work with.
I will never complain about the government spending for a booth at a conference again.
Yeah. It's
now that we know it actually works really well.
Oh, it works big time. It works very well. And they did it for a few years. They're expensive. The booths are expensive. And we're, you know, and the and you know, most of it is for these bigger game studios in Nova Scotia. But the fact that they let us be a part of that was amazing because it helped us so much.
Now, are you looking at other conventions and stuff like that, or do you guys go to anything like Comic-Con or anything like, or is that a plan? Or HellCon?
We go to we go to HellCon. We just go as fans when we go to those things. But GDC, we go as Zoning Games, and at PAX East is the next big one that I go to in Boston. We go as fans, but we still meet. We can still, like, I met Sony this year at PAX East, even though I was just there on by myself.
But now that you've got a big game, you might have to go as owner distributors, whatever.
We might go to E3 for the first time this year.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's big.
Yeah, just because we have this game out, we should. It's not like, one thing I could say is this. It's not a done, once you get a game out on a platform, that's not the end of the work. Marketing does matter. And if anybody ever sees, like, Overwatch advertisements, I mean, people think it's a movie when they see it on TV. It's a video game. Marketing matters big time. When I was at PAX East, there's not a single person at that show that doesn't know of Overwatch, because they had Lamborghinis giving free Uber rides with Overwatch characters driving it, and the Lamborghini was, like, covered in Overwatch advertisements, like, wrapped.
So that's what you're going to do at HellCon?
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
He'll be on a scooter.
Yeah, that's right.
A little lower budget there.
Yeah, a rickshaw, that's what I'll do.
This is so cool, and it's proven once again that you can stay in Yarmouth and do things like this and be successful at it.
Mm-hmm.
We're keeping our fingers crossed on more success.
Yes.
You said about all the marketing and everything, but do you already have ideas for another game, or is that you're going to run this one until you update it more?
There's more ideas for other games. In fact, there's one basically already completed, which, because I, reasons too long to go into, but there is, it's one of our other number one in Japan titles from 360. What, interestingly, Score Rush, the previous one, and this other one, Decimation X, they basically have the same accolades. They got the same awards, so to speak. They even sold within 100 units of each other. So they basically sold the same amount. So if Score Rush does well, then you can almost say, you can never say, but you can almost say that this next game will do as well. So that's where we're at.
All your family keeping their fingers crossed?
I guess so. I don't know.
So there you have it, folks. Score Rush Extended. It's on the PS4. You can get it now. Is it in stores around here yet?
So it's only digital. So
it's only digital.
Yeah. If you want it, you have to go to your PS4, find it on the dashboard where you buy games, or go to the PlayStation.com, search for it there.
Have you heard from anybody local that's played it? Come up to you and go, hey, guys?
Yeah. We have a lot of support from around here. A lot of people have played it and actually shared footage online and stuff.
Every once in a while, I talk to different people that do things on like YouTube or other things like that, and they're talking all about different games. Have you had any of that yet where they've gone, look, you got to check out this new game?
Yeah, so there are always people like that. We actually have some ideas that we want to hit some of the bigger ones to do some competition. Our older game, Machinima, gamers will know this, YouTube channel. Two people in Machinima kept going back and forth beating each other's Score Rush score. So so I thought, why not do that with some of these channels? It happened naturally. We didn't even ask for that. So now that we have a marketing company behind us who can, like, touch base with a lot of these Twitch streamers and YouTube gamers and everything.
And that's some of the best advertising you're going to get.
It is actually better. It's better to do that than getting a high review score.
Excellent.
Back in the day, it was all about the review score. Nowadays, it's just whether people like to play it. And you get the lowest review score, but if everybody's playing it on YouTube, it'll sell well.
Score Rush Extended, PS4, go on out and get online and get it, I guess, would be the best thing. And Matthew Doucette, and thanks for coming in, and congratulations to you and your brother and the rest of the gang for developing this.
Well, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
The Weekender will return in a moment on CJLS.